This is the session called, and I have to read it because it's such a long title, Creating an Online Research Collection on New York's Latino-Hispanic History, a Project Model for Collecting and Providing Access to Documentation for Minority Communities. Okay, I know that's a mouthful. So if this is the session that you are intending to come, welcome. If it's not the one you are intending to come to, I hope you change your mind and stay. There's a couple of housekeeping things I wanted to mention. There are program evaluation forms. If you can fill those out when you're finished with the conference, it is the way that the program committee can gauge what sessions were useful to you and how they might tailor programs in the future. I'll also be asking that you hold your questions until both speakers have finished speaking. So if you need to write down questions or comments, please do so, because we really do want to hear what you have to say or what questions you want to ask. Okay, well, let me start by introducing myself. My name is Jenny Diaz-Gilbo. I'm serving as the chair for this session. I'm a senior appraisal archivist at the National Archives and Records Administration. You all know that as NARA. There I apprenticed as a novice archivist back in 1985, back in the olden days, through a federal program called the Federal Career Intern Development Program, CIDS for short. During my tenure at NARA, I have worked with World War II and post-World War II military records. I established the Allied Control Commission, ACC Italy, microfilm project to operations, served as a research room supervisor, and worked as an appraisal archivist, since 1989. In that capacity, I would be conducting records management program evaluations, do training, and appraise federal records, which can be very interesting. In 1980, I received the BA in History and Anthropology from the College of William and Mary in Williamsburg, Virginia. So, well, this afternoon, my colleagues on this panel hope to take you on a journey. This is a journey that the New York State Archives and Records Administration initiated with a grant from the National Historic Publications and Records Commission to start the New York Heritage Documentation Project. That program includes the Ventana al Pasado Project, a researching website for the Latino-Hispanic community of that state. Ms. Prudence Bachman will be of the New York State Archives will explain how this project unfolded in creating a partnership of at least 9 repositories that includes El Centro de Estudios Puertorriqueños, the Center for Puerto Rican Studies in New York City, represented today by Mr. Pedro Juan Hernandez. Okay. Now, this session sets out to look at the Ventana Project as a possible model for collecting and providing web access for online research collections for minority communities, point out the challenges of documenting the Latino-Hispanic communities, and look at the importance of project planning. Okay. And what I'll do is give you the bios for the two speakers, and then we will have them come up and speak. The first speaker will be Pedro Juan Hernandez. He currently serves as the Centro's Acting Associate Director for the Library and Archives. He began his career at Centro as Project Archivist for the Documenting Latino Civil Rights History, the Puerto Rican Legal Defense and Education Fund records. And that was from 1994 to 96, after which he served as an archivist for the Centro until 2004, when he was promoted to senior archivist. His prior experience includes a position as head archivist for the Department of Puerto Rican Community Affairs in the United States from 1989 to 1993. He's not that old. I know we all love history, but as well as he was in the positions of as a history teacher and head of the social studies department at Colegio San Ignacio, and as a researcher, archivist assistant, and instructor at the University of Puerto Rico, where he received his Master's of Arts degree in history in 1989. In addition, Pedro Juan has participated in several noteworthy projects, including the coordination of El Barrio, Puerto Rican New York exhibit at the Museum of the City of New York from January 21st to June 12th in 2005, as well as co-authoring the publication Pioneros, Puerto Ricans in New York City, 1895 to 1948. Presently, he is serving as the New York City project coordinator for the Ventana al Pasado, building a Latino-Hispanic virtual research collection. And this is endeavor is at his shop is funded by a grant from the National Endowment of the Humanities. And now let me get my papers back in order. Afterwards, Ms. Prudence Blackman will be speaking. She is from the New York State Archives, and she's been there since 1992. She currently manages the Access Services Unit in Archival Services, where she is responsible for developing access tools that make available information about the holdings of historical records in New York. This includes maintaining the online catalog, records-related and historical records components of the State Archives website, develop and manage digitization projects. I practiced that one. And aptly current and apply current and emerging archival standards to access for holdings in New York State. Previously, she provided archival advisory services to local governments and historical records repositories throughout the state. Prior to working for the State Archives, she served for 4 years as the chief librarian at the Albany Institute of History and Art in Albany, New York, where she was responsible for the care of manuscript and archival records, maps, photographs, and the reference library. She also served for 10 years at the Essex Institute, which is now the Peabody and Essex Museum in Salem, Massachusetts, as curator of manuscripts, managing 4,000 linear feet of 17th century and 19th century family, business, local government, and societal manuscripts relating to Essex County in Massachusetts. Okay. She received her MLS from Simmons College in Boston, Massachusetts, and is a member of the Society of American Archivists, the New England Archivists, and the Capital Area Archivists, where she has held a variety of leadership positions. Prudence has conducted numerous workshops and presented papers for regional and national archival groups, as well as for local government associations. Her published works include Appraisal of Local Government Records for Historical Value, and State, Federal, and Private Sources of Funding for Archives, Historical Societies, Libraries, and Other Not-for-Profit Organizations. Okay, and it's my pleasure to let Pedro come up and speak to you.
So good afternoon, and I want to thank you all for coming. It really is a great experience to being here. I came 12 years ago to a society meeting in Philadelphia, and let me tell you, it's quite a big change to be here, and I feel more welcoming to be around the archivists. So I thank for the president for all her efforts to diversify and make change in the Society of American Archivists. So on behalf of all Latinos, thank you for all your work. I would like to thank the National Endowment for the Humanities for providing the funding for the Ventana al Pasado, building a Latino-Hispanic virtual research collection, and the New York State Archives and Records Administration for once again playing a leading role in finding new venues, in making accessible the documents that preserve the voices and perspectives of the Hispanic Latino population in New York. Ventana is a New York State collaborative project between 9 repositories holding Hispanic Latino historical records. All of the affiliates are widely different. Nonetheless, like all archival institutions, we share a common goal to preserve and make our collections available to a broader audience. Through our presentations, you will hear about the benefits and rewards of this collaborative effort. Today, I will describe how Centro de Estudios Puertorriqueños has been documenting the Puerto Rican communities and the challenge we had met during the last 34 years. Close to the end of my presentation, I will show you some of the central resources and mention how Ventana Online Research Collection will help us to improve and expand our services. The institutional and community support. So you're seeing on my slides before I say anything about it. So that's just an advantage, okay? The institutional and the community support had been important elements for our growth throughout the years. And Centro is a university-based research institute, part of the City University of New York, known by its acronym as CUNY, and located at Hunter College. Although we are an academic institution, we had very strong links to our communities. In fact, Centro was founded by Puerto Rican academics, students, and community activists in 1973 in the midst of the civil rights struggle movement. Like many of the minority groups, organizations, and programs that mushroomed during that period, our main goal was to make Puerto Ricans visible within the academic environment. Our current mission statement reveals how we are working at achieving this goal. It takes a little bit? Okay, now I'm getting it. The Central Library and Archives was originally created as the library that would support Central researchers and the newly created departments and programs of Puerto Rican studies throughout CUNY. Over the years, the library has become the principal Puerto Rican research collection in the United States, where researchers from all over the country, Puerto Rico, and abroad, come for information about the Puerto Rican migration. The library has been named the Belina Lopez Antonetti Research Collection after the educator, Bronx community activist, and founder of the United Bronx Parents, Inc., a grassroots organization whose records we now hold. In addition to showing our appreciation through naming the library after a well-known Puerto Rican leader, Centro has an open-door policy for all our visitors. In addition to that, Centro collaborates, participates in, and co-sponsors many community activities and events. Other key element in our development has been our work relationship with our community. The archives came into existence as the Centro research agenda evolved to incorporate community history. Centro research on early Puerto Ricans, migrants, pioneros, and women in the garment industry resulted in several oral history projects. As researchers conducted interviews among the early settlers, they uncovered a wealth of materials containing the history of our community, which needed to be preserved. At that time, despite limited resources, we accessioned the first 2 collections, understanding how significant these materials were for documenting our history. The archives is responsible for documenting the Puerto Rican diaspora, a complex endeavor. Puerto Rican presence in New York dates back to the 19th century. In fact, Puerto Rico's flag was created by political refugees from the island living in the city in 1895. Among them, Arturo Alfonso Schomburg, black scholar, bibliophile, and striving force in the creation of the Schomburg Center for Research in Black Culture. The first collection donated to Centro, however, were the papers of Puerto Rican pionero Jesus Colon, who arrived in New York in 1918. The Jesús Colón papers is one of the most heavily used collections in Central Archives because it's a great source of information about our early communities in the 1920s. The second was a photograph collection by Cuban photographer Justo Amartí. He donated to Centro 6,000 photographs and 10,000 negatives documenting Puerto Ricans and other Latinos living in New York City. With the Colón papers and the Martí photographic collection in our hands, the seed for an archival component within the library was planted. Immediately after accessing these two collections, our head librarian, Nelida Perez, acquired a certificate in archives and began writing grants to obtain funds for processing. Soft money was the sole funding source for the archives in its first years of existence. In 1989, a small grant from the New York State Archives Documentary Heritage Project to conduct a survey of the Puerto Rican records in New York set the framework for developing the archives program. This grant, soon followed by others from the government and the private sector, enabled a number of collections to be made available to researchers. 10 years ago, Centro demonstrated its commitment to the archives by giving up and converting a researcher into an archivist line, providing the stability needed in the repository. In the last year, we also got several grants and secured support from our elected officials. Our largest collection, 2,500 cubic feet, is the records of the offices of the... 5 years ago, we named the archives of the Puerto Rican diaspora and expanded our mission and our collection policy to document the Puerto Rican migration more broadly stateside. So far, we are the only repository exclusively documenting the Puerto Rican migration. Our largest collection, 2,500 cubic feet, is the records of the offices of the government of Puerto Rico in the United States. It is comprised of the documents of several Puerto Rican agencies operating in the states with offices in different locations in New York State and other states in the Northeast region. These offices, Chicago, the second most important branch after New York, and Cleveland, the third one, intended to help our migrants assimilate into the so-called American way of life with ease. These documents date from 1930 to 1993. The archives of the Puerto Rican diaspora contains more than 100 collections, over 6,000 cubic feet of records, at this moment the most extensive Puerto Rican archival facility stateside. The collection spanned the years from the 1920s to the 21st century. Although our goal is to preserve Puerto Rican history and culture stateside, we also hold important documentation related to other Latino communities and to the nation broadly. Nowadays, many people question if Centro will remain in this pan-Latino era exclusively devoted to collecting documents about Puerto Rican, since we are no longer the so-called predominant Hispanic group in the city. Dominican and Mexican presence have become more visible, while Puerto Rican, though still the largest Latino group, has dwindled. To that question, our answer is yes, that we are still strongly committed to our mission statement. Okay. Language policy is a challenge that any archival institution documenting and conducting outreach project directed towards the newly Latino needs to be addressed. And in Ventana, we confront that issue. Central Archives has documents are written in both Spanish and English, which is important because it keeps the archives accessible to all our patrons. We need to communicate with our Spanish-speaking communities to understand the documents they have created and to organize and process papers and records. Central researchers can consult our finding aids on site and online and our website. Centro Collections, are cataloged in OCLC and Arling as well. We have 31 guides in each language in the EAD format on the internet, so we had to do the work twice. Despite all the progress made in producing guides and making them available, accessibility to the collection is limited to on-site visits. Access to microfilm or by subscription to literary sites that have acquired rights to post some of our resources. As do most institutions of our size, we feel the demand and pressure to keep up with our users' expectation in this quickly evolving digital era. We find ourselves constantly having to explain to our patrons the difficulties, challenges, and costs of undertaking digitization projects. Very often, they are oblivious about what it takes to get a project of this kind done. Collaborative work has played a key role in our organization's development. Partnership with other archival organizations and working collaboratively with our researchers are ways that we have been able to start some projects in this direction. The creation of a virtual research collection will be a very useful tool for making actual holdings available online and meeting researchers' demands. At this moment, we have two web-based projects that give our researchers more dynamic ways to access our collections, whether they are in Europe, Asia, Puerto Rico, or in other states. The first is an interactive site titled Puerto Rican Writers and Migration, Folklore, Autobiography, and History, created by researchers working in collaboration with the archive staff. This site highlights the lives and contribution of Jesús Colón, Pura Belpré, and Antonia Pantoja. The second provides access to a database that we created in the archives for those interested in searching the identification and documentation program, the oldest program of the Puerto Rican government agency collection I mentioned before. The program created an identification card that became very popular among Puerto Ricans, although Puerto Ricans became American citizens in 1917, and the ID card was not mandatory. The agency expedited 50,000 cards during the period from 1930 to 1959. Many Puerto Ricans migrants needed the identification card because they did not have an identification document in English to verify their citizenship. These services ended in 1993. Our website described the program, display a sample of 46 records, and allow researchers to search for family members through the database. These documents are very precious to family historians and are heavily used, especially for genealogy. The Ventana project will help our partners to catalog and showcase 3,000 documents to audiences beyond our traditional researchers. This online research collection will allow us, the participants, the opportunity to share and link our archival treasures and make them available to researchers from distant places. I will show you quickly 12 slides, each one representing a theme with documents from Central Archives. Each one represents a theme of the project, and I will briefly comment on in two of them. The first group was migration and settlement. Another topic is arts and culture, business, community festival, parades and celebrations, family and community life, education, health, is helping me. Historical events and milestones. And at your left, you can see New York City Mayor Robert Wagner and his wife welcoming the revolutionary Cuban leader Fidel Castro visit to New York City in 1959. At your right, you can see the Kennedys and Puerto Rico Governor Luis Muñoz Marín and his wife during the gala reception held at the White House on which the famous cellist Pablo Casar performed. We have occupational labor, and here we see Cesar Chavez visiting New York and working with the labor leaders in New York City. Politics and government and law, social reform, and women. There's a lot of other topics. Here, Antonia Pantoja, founder of Aspira and other organizations, was recipient of the Presidential Medal of Freedom in 1996. For her long life commitment to the service of Puerto Rican communities in the United States and in Puerto Rico. Together with Dr. Pantoja, are the Clintons, obviously, and you can also see the first Puerto Rican elected Congresswoman, Nidia Velázquez. In the past, our researchers have used Centro Collection to write doctoral dissertations, books, and essays, to produce curriculum materials, video documentaries, multimedia projects, and plays. One example of non-academic output is Pioneros, a photo compilation that I co-authored with Centro former director. So far, this book has been one of our most important tools to show some of our archival resources to researchers out of state. There's no doubt that Ventana project will do much better than the Pioneros book as an access tool to central resources. And in particular, we are very excited about the electronic schoolhouse. Schoolhouse is a very important outgrowth of project of Ventana that it will expand our presence in the classroom and in the curriculum materials. And no, Prudence is going to talk a little bit more in detail about that. So I hope this presentation has given you a better idea of the kind of holdings that will be accessible thanks to the Ventana project. Indeed, it is a unique opportunity for all the participants. Even being present today before you during prime time, the first day of session, is a result of us as our participation in Ventana. So far, it has been a productive and enriching experience in how to develop projects like this in the future. We are looking forward to the day that we launch the site and open the window through which you can look into these Hispanic Latino archival collections. In the meantime, I invite you all to visit our newly updated and improved website, www.centropr.org, to be launched the second week of September. For all those interested in learning about Centro and the Puerto Rican migration resources in the archives, please visit Centro website to get more information about our current research agenda, activities, and ongoing projects, and or use our academic peer-reviewed journal. Thank you very much.
Okay, now we get to switch. I think Pedro has given you a fabulous oversight to the wealth of information that's available at Centro and that we hope will be available to others. Let's see, here we go. Okay, so I'm going to talk about the project. I think you can also tell from all that Centro has, Pedro has said why we chose Centro to be the partner in this project, Ventana al Pasado. We did it not only because they're a fabulous repository, but they have the Spanish language skills that I lack. Mm-hmm. And so please bear with me as I know that I can't pronounce Spanish. Can barely pronounce English sometimes, but I've come to really love and value the Latino heritage that that I've seen in New York State, and actually that I've seen across the country. It's an incredibly important part of our heritage, and I think that we in New York recognize that. We know that many people, places, groups, issues and events make up the fabric of New York's past and present, and for that matter, of the country as a whole. But despite the efforts of historical records repositories like Centro, there remain significant gaps and inadequacies in the documentation of, in our case, New York. New York State Archives is committed to ensuring the ongoing development of a comprehensive, balanced, and accessible historical record in the repositories of New York, a record that reflects the full range of the state's peoples, organizations, and governments, and that is heavily used by scholars, citizens, educators, and researchers of all kinds. Since 1996, we have focused statewide efforts on underdocumented topics and communities. And in 2001, we listed the Latino community as a priority in that documentation efforts. Okay. Didn't press it hard enough. Okay. New York is a microcosm of the nation in the diversity of its Hispanic population, their aggregate size relative to the total population, and the issues that they faced. It is now the largest minority population in New York as well as in the United States. The Latino population in New York includes migrants, immigrants, and descendants of people from Spain, Mexico, Central America, South America, Puerto Rico, the Dominican Republic, Cuba, and the rest of the Spanish-speaking Caribbean. Latinos have settled in all parts of the state. About 75% of the state's Hispanics live in the five boroughs of New York City, another 10% on Long Island. But there are other upstate urban areas which have substantial Hispanic populations, including the Buffalo, Niagara area, Rochester, Syracuse, the Capital Region, which includes Albany, Schenectady, and Troy, and Poughkeepsie. There are also growing numbers of Latino communities in small cities, towns, and rural areas in many parts of the state. Latinos have participated in and contributed to every aspect of social, political, economic, and cultural life in our state. And yet in New York, as well as nationally, the Latinos are poorly represented in the publicly accessible historic record. This project, Ventana al Pasado, has been designed to address this deficit by improving the volume, range, and quality of Latino records available for research. As Pedro mentioned, and as Jenny mentioned as well, this project really is building off of several prior projects that we began. From 2001 to 2002, New York had an NHPRC grant to look at New York's heritage through a documentation project, and the Latino Heritage Project was a part of that. It involved working with scholars and leaders from many Hispanic and non-Hispanic sectors of the community, people who create the records, care for the records, use, and are the subjects of the historical records. It identified issues, people, organizations, and events that are most critical to document. One of the interesting things that came out of this project was the realization that we couldn't write a history of Latinos in the state because there was an inadequate historical record to provide the research for that, that narrative. And that, in part, has spurred us on to continue working towards improving the historic record. The project produced a guide to documenting Latino and Hispanic history and culture in New York State, a preliminary guide to the existing historical records found in repositories around the state, and extensive Latino material and links to the state archives that you can find on the state archives website. Pedro mentioned the Documentary Heritage Program, which is the grant funding program for historical records repositories. They have made Latino history and culture one of the top three documentation projects. And since they did that in 2001, over 20 documentation initiatives have been completed or underway. And in fact, all of the participants of this grant have had at one time a DHP grant to help them either identify and or describe their records. Our educational unit, through their Legacies Project, has created an educational web resource that explores the history of Chinese and Latino populations in the Capital District, Buffalo, Syracuse, New York City, and Yonkers. This project came out of a local actually had its origin in a local government grant that encouraged, there's one particular high school that deals in New York City with students who have just come to the United States and do not have English, and they really wanted to make the records available to this body of students in their native language so that they could make a connection with them to better improve their English, their history, and their other skills. And the Legacy Project built off the work of the Liberty High School. The project contains concise histories of Chinese and Latino communities in each city, and it provides document-based activities for use in the classroom. And the histories are illustrated by historical contemporary documents and photographs. And again, during the course of this project, it was very difficult for the teachers to find historic records that were that were Hispanic or Latino of origin, and that's why so many contemporary records were used. From 2002 to 2005, the New York State Archives had an NEH grant to create an environmental history virtual research collection that created internet-accessible finding aids for 162 collections and over 3,000 images that focused on the environmental history of the Adirondack and Catskills parks. That project helped define the strategy and approach that we're using in this project. So what are our project goals? Well, as we've mentioned, we want to integrate the assets of 9 repositories into a collective access tool and make it available through a bilingual gateway on the web. We want to draw attention to the importance of the records, not only for historians, but also for community leaders, for those who are trying to connect to the communities, to understand the communities more and to gain more empathy for the struggles and the efforts and value of the citizens in those communities, and to document further, to stimulate further documentation efforts, as well as to serve for a model for other states with substantial Hispanic, Latino communities or other underdocumented populations. As I mentioned, this project follows the methodology developed by our previous NEH-funded project. It too is a collaborative effort, bringing together 9 repositories throughout the state that represent a broad range of our constituents, both public and private, large and small institutions, academic, government, and historical records repositories. The project will enhance the description of the records, and also, as Pedro mentioned, will be imaging over imaging records and integrating them on the website. One of the things that we found during the Environmental History Project was the relationships that existed amongst records that we were not aware of previously. We found related records provided information and insight into other records in other repositories, and we made sure that these connections were incorporated into the finding aids that we developed and modified during the project, and we anticipate that the same will occur during this project. When we say create or enhance archival descriptions, what we're talking about is that in many cases, when a finding aid exists, the description doesn't point to the specific topics and themes that might be of interest to the Latino community. So we're going in, we're looking at that, and we're trying to draw out those themes so that if you're looking at labor history records and you talk about the activities and events of the labor unions, that you're mentioning which were the Hispanic-related like one group is the hospital, is a hospital-oriented labor union. Which were the hospitals that had primarily labor unions? Which were the populations that they in general tended to represent? Were there a lot of, was it primarily blacks and Hispanics with a few Chinese and Finnish? Or was it primarily another ethnic group with only a few Hispanics present? We will be digitizing and then providing online access, including metadata, to over 3,000 images. And you saw the incredible wealth that Central has in their images, not only of the Puerto Rican community, but they also have other communities present in their records. And then we're going to be linking them through a bilingual website. Two of the components that we had hoped to fund through the grant had to be removed, the bilingual component and the educational resource, because of the funding, NEH reduced our funding, and I'll talk about how we dealt with that a little bit later. In general, we wanted this project to make a direct and quantitatively impact on the volume, range, and quality of the Latino records available for research. At the time we wrote this grant, while Central had a number of records available through their catalog, there was only a handful, I believe, of the guides that were up on the web. And we were looking, you know, they've made an incredible progress since once between when we applied and when we started the grant, but there's a lot more to do. And we recognize and we want to continue forward with that. Okay. So what's new and different about this project from the environmental history? Well, first and foremost, the other project focused on a subject, in that case, environmental affairs. This grant is focusing on a population group, which adds a whole new complexity in terms of what are the subjects that are present in the records, and how do you deal with that, I mean, all the aspects of a population group. It's almost limitless in what they can do, and even if we narrow down the topics using the suggested topics that were present in the guide to documenting Latinos, there's still a vast range of potential topics. There's also it's much more difficult to find relevant records. The Latinos, particularly in the early stages of their presence in this country, are hidden. They're a hidden population group. You have to go and look in other records to find what they were doing, how they were being impacted by our government, how they were participating in a variety of groups. And trying to identify those series and collections, and then how do you describe that once you do? Do you talk about just focus in on the Hispanic population to the exclusion of all the other ones, or do you talk in general about the collection and just highlight what is going on in the Latino community? We wanted in this project, and fortunately because we received funding, we will be including a bilingual dimension where we're going to be providing information in both Spanish and English, not only because some of the material is in Spanish, and the potential Spanish-speaking scholars and educators would want to use it, but also because there are people in who speak only English, who will be reading the Spanish material, and need to have an understanding of what's present. And we feel very strongly, New York does a lot with education, and if you have any educational issues or concerns, I really recommend you go to our website and go to the education part, because we do a lot of teaching with historic records materials. We want to support teachers and students, particularly those in ESL programs, to use the records in the classroom. So Pedro went over who the participants are. As you can see, it's a wide variety. There are we've sort of fallen into upstate and downstate with Centro, downstate, the Dominican Studies, Hofstra, Hostas, and the New York City Municipal Archives, upstate consisting of Cornell, Onondaga Historical Society, Rochester, and the State Archives. There's some difference in these project participants from the previous grant. In the previous grant, most of the records had already been in repositories for a long time. They had been described. They were made available in Arlen and OCLC. This time around, many of the records have just been acquired, and they have not yet been processed, so we're starting from scratch. There's a wide variety of information of what you're going to see, and actually Pedro has gone over that, so I think I don't think I can say it any better than his images and what he shared in doing it. But we do have a wide variety of topics such as bilingual education, educational advancement, cultural solidarity and expression, union activities, civil rights, legal status, etc. So what are our challenges that we're facing? First and foremost, it was finding qualified employees. We received the grant we were to begin the grant in October of 2005. I don't know if you saw it, but we sent out numerous calls for people to apply. We received very few applications. Those who, and in some cases we did get some very qualified people, but state government moves a lot slower than a lot of people want, and so they had taken other jobs by the time we could get them approved. We were not able to hire. Our intent was to hire two archivists. The first one, for based in New York City, we finally were able to appoint by June of 06, which was like 8 or 9 months after the project was to begin, and the upstate archivist, we could not find an archivist who had Spanish-speaking skills. We wanted someone who had both Spanish and archival, and we had a very challenging time. And I think that's one area that we recognize we really need to improve in, to get more Latinos into the archival workforce. As I mentioned earlier, we received reduced funding from NEH, and so we sought and received additional funding for the bilingual and educational components from the Time Warner, and that's the project that's been labeled Escuela Electronica, or the Electronic Schoolhouse, and it will be developing a bilingual website to provide online access to scan documents, photographs, and other images to deliver online interdisciplinary teaching aids like document-based questions, curriculum resource questions, and it will be producing 5 webinars to teach to train teachers how to use the resource. The challenge there is that we knew we didn't have the money, and we went out and sought it and found it immediately through Time Warner. So the Electronica Escuela began before we began the NEH project. And while the identification of the teaching materials could happen independent of what we were doing in arranging and describing the records, the bilingual is a lot more challenging. And our bilingual money ends in December, and we're only halfway through the project. So we're trying to be creative in how we can address that. We also had anticipated in the timeline between when we applied and when we received it that some of the donations that people anticipated would be in hand. We found that that did not happen, and we had to encourage people to get those donations in, and they have since done that. And we thought we were going to have some infrastructure improvements that didn't happen on time and has also been challenging. We have one question to remain that we definitely have to deal with is what level of translation will we be providing for the material online. Will we be translating at just the upper level descriptions, or will we go further down to the containerless? Will we be doing metadata or not? Those are all questions that have yet to be answered. So to date, we have arranged and described 50 of the finding aids, and over 1,000 images have been collected. As I mentioned, the two outstanding donations have been made. We've created the bilingual brochure that I hope you picked up as you came in. The Electronica Schoolhouse is concluding in December. 90 to 100 educational lessons have been developed that include over 120 documents. And that's pretty much all that I have to say in terms of the project. You can contact us at the State Archives, and here's our information, and Pedro gave you his information, which I counted on him doing. And I think, Jenny, you may have. You can look at Cancun while we.
Yeah, that looks good.
All right. And I'm just going to mention a few, briefly go over some broad project management concepts to keep in mind as you are beginning to plan projects, especially something as large as this, but I do have to give you a disclaimer that I am not a certified project manager, and also that the comments that I make are my own and are not part of NARA policy, so we always have to say that. Given that, let me begin by stating that every project has a triple constraint. The first, scope and its management, whereby you control a project in terms of its goals and objectives through the processes or phases of conceptual development through execution and termination by prioritizing and determining the sets of requirements that can be implemented in a particular release phase or a cycle based on the resources and time available. And that's a mouthful, but that is basically what you're going after in your scope, and how to keep it within scope and not going beyond that might interfere with the resources and time that you have allocated. The second are the resources, and that's the personnel, the equipment, the materials, and the services needed to complete the tasks of the project. The third, time and its management, whereby you do what is required to maintain appropriate allocation of time to the overall conduct of the project through its successive phases. So a project as large as Ventana al Pasado is broken up into portions. So you had the education part and some of the other parts that, of course, I'm going blank on. But as you find that your resources and your time might be getting tight, as with soft money will happen, then you can push some of those components to the back burner until you're ready to bring them on. So you want to prioritize which ones you're trying to get out first that will do the most good to reach your objectives. Okay, you have a question? Oh, okay. I have 5 minutes. Okay. Well, then, I won't give you any examples. I'll just give you the bullets as they are. When planning a project of the scope, then you are creating a living entity that is led by the project manager. And within this entity are the players that shape and influence how the end product is going to be achieved. So they may include senior management. As Pedro mentioned, senior management in their shop changed the researcher position to archivist position that institutionalized their support for the project. A sponsor, that would more than likely be someone giving a grant in this case. A boss, they are the ones who will recommend what is going to continue or what is not going to continue. The project staff, they are the ones working on the multiple tasks that make up the end product or in support of the project. And the colleagues, such as yourselves, that give advice, guidance, and feedback. And there are the program managers that control internal resources. You know which ones they are. They're the ones that give you the opportunity to brush up on your diplomacy skills. You may need to negotiate with these managers to borrow or schedule resources, such as computer time or access to document scanners or even to people. And the internal users, they may be dependent on the phases that you are rolling out in your project for their own tasks that are incorporated within the overall project. And they will serve as a basis, as supporters for you to be able to move on as you sometimes need to build coalitions within to move your project forward. Just as there are internal influences, there are external forces that also shape your project, such as the organization that is putting forth the project. So that could be the government, the university, a corporation, or other entity. And they have their own peculiarities that they're going to want to instill into the project and the operations. So that might include some auditing and the like, evaluation, periodic evaluations. There are the suppliers. Do they have what you need when you need it? Subcontractors that you may use, and they may also be people who are folded into the overall project, and the product end users, ultimately your customers. In a project as large and as broad as Ventana, the players within and outside the organization may wear multiple hats. In their roles, they'll be influencing your project. The reality is that the project manager has little direct control of many of the aspects of a project, the larger the project becomes. And I'll go ahead and end that there. Since I only have 2 minutes left, and we certainly want to have your questions and comments. Yes, ma'am.
Do you have a response?
Yes. Can you repeat your question for the record and the rest of us?
Okay. Now, repeating the question, have we, make sure that I'm saying it right, that have we reached out in recruiting to Puerto Rico to find those archivists that are have the dual language skills and also the having positions for archivists within Puerto Rico? Is that?
Well, Puerto Rico, there's not enough positions.
There's not enough positions. Okay, so we need to import.
Yeah, I can answer that. The field is already starting to grow.
Starting to develop.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, that was one of the problems.
Okay.
I just want to add that in I came from Puerto Rico, and basically because I was offered a position to work with the archives of the government of Puerto Rico. And back then, I was fortunate to get a job just kind of out of the plane. No? Mm-hmm. And but it's a challenge that does not only come from with the degree from Puerto Rico, but then you have to immerse yourself in learning the history of Puerto Ricans here. And that's another story. Because there's a totally, even we are Puerto Ricans, but it's a totally different culture that you have to learn the process, you have to learn the faces. So it is a challenge. So it's not just to bring archivists from Puerto Rico, you just have to go through a whole process. It's a little bit more complicated.
Yeah. Now we have gone over our time a little bit, but if anybody else has a question or is it dinner time?